I read the tradition. Okay, so the Tradition 8 long form reads, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional. We define professionalism as the occupation of counseling alcoholics for fees or hire, but we may employ alcoholics where they are going to perform those services for which we might otherwise have to engage non-alcoholics. Such special services may be well recompensed, but our usual AA 12-step work is never to be paid for. And I love when Carrie always says, for fun and for free, not for fee or for hire. So anyway, I stole that from you, but I love you, Carrie. So here's Carrie tonight to talk to you guys about Tradition 8. Thank you for being with us, Carrie.
Thanks, Dee. And hi, everybody. My name is Carrie and I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the New Horizons Group in beautiful Bend, Oregon. And I am currently working the maintenance and growth steps. I love Tradition 8. I didn't always understand Tradition 8. And yes, in the long form, it has those magic words, right? We don't do this for fee or for hire. We do this for fun and for free. After the last workshop last week, somebody reminded me that I forgot to, I told you at the beginning of the workshop that I would be giving you out of the 12 and 12, that little tagline about, you know, the principle behind all of these, because again, there's no list of principles behind this traditions or the steps. I mean, a lot of drunk junk stores make money off that stuff, but you won't find it in conference approved literature, right? But you can pull out little things that Bill does. And so last week I forgot to show you where it was, but it's in Tradition 7, it's freely, no, it's whoever pays the piper is apt to call the tune. So I'll let you guys find that highlight. And that's in Tradition 7 essay. And then if you missed it, if I missed it the week before, Tradition 6 is too many busybody cooks spoil the broth. and then in Tradition 5, if you want to go back one more, shoemakers stick to thine last. And now we're on freely ye have received, freely give. And that's the principle behind Tradition 8 is freely ye have received, freely give. And basically that means, you know, when I was new, I had people who come by the house and picked me up and took me to a meeting and they didn't charge me for that. And I had somebody who helped me go through this big book. She wasn't even, I had somebody help me through the work. I had somebody my sponsor guided me in a lot of different directions, helped me with things. I didn't know really how to even go to the bathroom without disrupting the meeting, right? Like, seriously, I thought that in my home group, so there's this one guy in my home group who sponsored a whole lot of guys and he was really structured, right? And he was like, he made them all sit in the front row. They had to wear like collars on their shirts and they weren't allowed to like cuss and say the F word in meetings. And there was this one guy who was sponsored by this guy and he was always standing by the bathroom door. And I told my friend one day, I'm like, oh my God, I think Shane always has gas. Like I didn't understand why he was standing by the bathroom door, but that because I had no etiquette when I got here. I don't care about the meeting. Like I disrupt the meeting whenever but he was taught that when you go to the bathroom, you wait until the share is done or the reading is done or whatever. And then you go to the bathroom and same with when you come back to your seat, you wait at the bathroom door. So you're not walking through the meeting until the share is done or until the, you know, the speaker is done. And then you come back to your seat. I didn't know any of that. Right. But my sponsor taught me that. And so now if I were to take all of that stuff that was so freely given to me and turn around and sell it by becoming, I don't know, a sober coach or a mentor or whatever, you know, it just, it wouldn't be in alignment with the principle. right? Because I can only give away what was so freely given to me. I can't charge for what was so freely given to me. And so that's kind of, this has happened so much, and I probably wouldn't have shared this story had it not just happened again today. And I can tell you probably maybe 15 now other examples, and I'll spare you. I'll just share the latest with you. I saw on Facebook today, this guy who, he got sober in not my home group, but in a group that meets in the same facility as my home group. And so I was, and he came to my home group quite a bit. He would have been about 4 years sober, I think, I'm guessing. And he got a job as a mentor, a recovery mentor. And I didn't know that, but I haven't seen him around for a couple of years. And today I saw on Facebook that he didn't have his sobriety anymore. And so I called him up, and this is what I'm taught to do. Whenever anybody with time goes out, I ask him, how many people were you sponsoring? See, I didn't know he was a recovery mentor. And I just usually ask that because the question is normally, it's not how many meetings you're making. The question, usually the answer is, oh, well, I wasn't sponsoring yet, or I'm not sponsoring. I had no idea the direction that this conversation was going to go. I was just expecting him to say, oh, well, I wasn't really sponsoring. And I was going to be like, oh, okay, good information, you know, because I got to give this thing away to keep it, right? But instead of saying I wasn't really sponsoring, he's like, you know what I do for a living, right? And I'm like, no, what do you do? And he goes, probably a dozen, at least. I'm a recovery mentor. And I said, oh, I said, and those are the people that you're sponsoring? And he goes, well, it was just, it's the same thing. And I mean, it's too soon to have that conversation with him. He just lost his sobriety date. So I'm probably not going to do that anytime soon, but that's what I see. That's my own experience. You know, I have to give this thing away for fun and for free. I have to be helping someone else. It can't be my work. So I'm going to take the principle out of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, which is where I love to go for traditions before the traditions were even created, right? Let's go to page 18 in Bill's story out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it says on the top of the page, none of us make a sole vocation of this work. What is a vocation? Well, it's a career or occupation, right? For fee or for hire. An avocation is what Alcoholics Anonymous is. A gift of the heart is what Alcoholics Anonymous is. A few are so fortunate toward the end of the paragraph, enough to be so situated that they can give nearly all their time to this work. I would consider myself in that category, but I give it. I don't charge for it. And I wouldn't. And the reason why is because I don't think I could wear one hat at a time. I don't think I'm too AA all the time, you know? And those who can wear two hats appropriately, oh, amazing, wonderful, you know? And I'm so grateful that you're out there, but it's not me. I'm just too much AA all the time. We have one gentleman, and I think I shared this story with you in Tradition 6, that he wears the hats very well. And when he comes to my home group, he brings his guys, the guys from the sober living house or the treatment center or wherever he works, right? He puts them in the front row. He goes and sits in the back row. Even though he's a sober member of a 12-step fellowship, this guy does not participate, not in the seventh tradition, not putting his name on a phone list, not in sharing, not in reading, because he's on the clock, right? He's doing that for his occupation. So he does not participate in any way, shape, or form. Now he drops those guys back off, clocks out, puts his AA hat back on, and he goes to his home group across town where none of his clients go, and he has a service commitment, and he sponsors guys for fun and for free. And that's, you know, that is how this should work. So I'll just read something in the eighth tradition illustrated toward the bottom of the page. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm going to just kind of, just a couple of things I wanted to read. This does not mean, of course, that the idea of turning professional has never entered into the AA's mind. In the lean years, Bill W. did think of becoming a lay therapist to earn money through his experience in helping alcoholics. But with a strong nudge from the group conscience, which is probably one of the first group consciences AA had, right? It became clear to early members that no AA should ever ask or accept payment for carrying this message to someone else, person to person and face to face. And I don't have my pass it on, or no, my Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers book here, but oh my goodness, there's a portion in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers that I didn't know this. You always hear about Bill Wilson getting offered the job at Towns Hospital, right? And he's like, oh, this is the solution. Poor Lois, whose wife is at home working, you know, night and day to feed these drunks that he keeps bringing home. Plus she's working at the department store during the day. He's like, this is the answer, right? I got a job at Towns Hospital. Charlie Towns offered me the answer. And he's riding the subway home. And all of a sudden he hears what he thinks is the voice of God, saying the laborer is worthy of the hire, or his hire, or something like that, right? And he thinks that's the voice of God, which is why I always need to check the voice of God with a sponsor or my home group. And he sees that, he sees, you know, when he walks in the house and he introduces the good news to all the drunks that his wife is about to feed, and everybody kind of had a different, you know, they're like, whoa, no, that doesn't sound like a great idea. Bill, don't you see? This thing can never be sold. Like, we can't ruin this. I mean, yeah, that's good, but the good is often the enemy of the best. You know, that would have been good, but we have to do the good just isn't good enough. We have to do the best. We cannot let this thing get tied up in money. And so, you know, I always hear that, right? But Dr. Bob, it happened to him too. I didn't know that. I didn't know that until reading recently in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. I'm in this study that we're going through that book, and it happened to Dr. Bob too. And Dr. Bob, there's a page that says something like, after Dr. Bob turned it down, the money that he needed, it said, rarely does temptation, future temptation ever not return, or ever, you know, usually the temptation returns. For Dr. Bob, it never did. And for the person who was writing that section to Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers said, and to this day, I don't know of a single cent that Dr. Bob ever charged. And when there was a person who comes in Dr. Bob's office looking for help and they're an alcoholic, Dr. Bob would actually refer them to a different doctor. Wow. Talk about sacrificing personal ambition for the common good. Talk about wearing two hats appropriately. Talk about the example for me. I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful to our trailblazers. So the other, obviously the reason why we have this tradition is, not just for the two hatters, but for the two hatters. I mean, treatment centers aren't really two hatters. They're kind of outside issues. We do hire special workers, right? Special workers at the general service office. We pay people to work there. And some of them are alcoholic. A lot of them are alcoholic. But when they're working there, they're not hired because they're doing 12-step work. Whether they're alcoholic or not alcoholic, they're hired to make the 12-step work possible for us, right? So they're doing all the stuff behind the scenes, printing literature, making sure the phones are answered, right? And even let's bring it down to the intergroup level, right? Because everybody has a local central office or intergroup. And a lot of the time your central office or your intergroup, just like at the GSO, will hire a paid worker, our office manager at my local intergroup office, she's a paid worker. She answers the phones and she's paid to make sure that the internet bill gets paid and to make sure that we have printer paper stocked at the office and to make sure that when a group calls and says, hey, do you have a case of 20 big books and three Dr. Bob and the good old timers? She's on the phone to say, well, I have most of that, but I'll put it in order for the rest and I'll give you a call when it's done, right? And she answers the phone and does all of this office stuff, and you come in and you buy stuff from her and she prints out a receipt. She's making our group's 12-step work possible, but she's not doing 12-step work. She's not working one-on-one with another drunk. She's working with the groups, and so basically if somebody calls and she's at the office and she answers the phone, even though she's alcoholic and they need help and they need to talk to another alcoholic, she patches them through to someone who is off the clock on the 12-step call list for free and for fun, wanting to do service work. She doesn't take that call and try to help somebody. She says, I'm going to hook you up with someone who can help you, right? And if there's no one available and she's willing to risk losing her job, then maybe she can clock out and go and help that person and go on a 12-step call herself. But she won't do that on the clock. And that's the, you know, that's kind of the, where that line should be held. And then here's another, and this is the last thing that I'll read before my time is up. So there would be another problem using volunteers only. I love this. It would seem ungrateful, and I'm reading out of the 12 traditions illustrated on the very last paragraph, the very last full paragraph. So it says there would be another problem using volunteers only. It seems ungrateful, or at least it's socially awkward, to criticize or reject a job done for free. But paid jobs, at least, but paid jobs for AA get quite the going over. And so that means if the office manager is doing a volunteer work, then you're not going to give her an annual performance review. You know, you're not going to have people vote on her performance. But since she's paid, then you want to give her an annual review. You want to give her a raise if she's doing a good job. If she's not doing a good job, you want to address that, you know, and it would be really awkward if we weren't paying her to have to tell her that she's not doing a good job. So that's why we have paid workers. They don't do 12-step work. Nobody does any 12-step work in Alcoholics Anonymous and gets paid for it. The people who get paid are not doing 12-step work. Again, once again, they're doing the work behind the scenes that make our 12-step work possible. So that's what I got for Tradition 8. It's awesome to see all you guys. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Carrie. Thank you. I feel like I have to unmute and clap, and you know, it's so quiet in here. Thank you again for your service. And up next, we have Billy on Concept 8. For those of you that are just joining us during Carrie's talk, the link is and will be in the chat. If you've missed any recordings, I heard somebody mention they missed last week. Again, we have recordings available in the chat. You will find that link. So Billy is with us tonight, going to be talking on Concept 8. And Concept 8 reads, the trustees of the General Service Board act in two primary capacities. A, with respect to the larger matters of overall policy and finance, they are the principal planners and administrators. They and their primary committees directly manage these affairs. B, but with respect to our separately incorporated and constantly active services, the relation of the trustees is mainly that of full stock ownership and of custodial oversight, which they exercise through their ability to elect all directors of these entities. I want to thank you, Billy, for being with us this evening. I give you Billy Yen.
Thanks, everyone. Billy Alcoholic, coming to you live from California tonight. What is afternoon? If everyone has their service manual, and I'm still using my old service manual where the cover is almost ripped off, I just want to ask everyone before we go to Concept 8 to go to page 1 without an S, which is the introduction to the concepts. And I just want to ask everyone to go to the bottom paragraph on page one. I just want to read it. Concern has been expressed. Now, remember, we're talking about concern in the 50s, right? So when we say concern, Bill wrote this in the early 60s. Concern has been expressed lest the detailed portrayal of our internal structure might not later harden down into such a firm tradition or gospel that necessary changes would be impossible to make. Nothing could stray further from the intent of these concepts. The future advocates of structural change will only need to make out a strong case for their recommendations, a case convincing to both the trustees and to the conference. This is no more than would be required for the transaction and passage of any other important piece of AA business. Save for an exception or two, it is noteworthy that the conference charter itself can easily be amended. Perhaps one more precaution ought to be observed when a proposed structural change is to be especially far-reaching. In such an event, the alteration should, for an appropriate period, be labeled as experimental. On final approval, an alteration of this character could be entered into a special section of this manual, which might be entitled Amendments. This would leave the original draft of the concepts intact as an evidential record of former experience. Then it could always be clearly seen by our future service workers just what did happen and why. So why did I read that? For two reasons. And then we can go over to page 31. I read it for two reasons. The first reason is that our structure today we've had for a long time. And there are many who think today there might be a different way of doing business for our corporate structures. And I just want to point out that you can't just shut your head to every new idea, myself included. That Bill suggested that there might be need for change. But the other reason that I read that section is because lately, meaning in the last 10 years, there's been a lot of requests to change the narratives and the concepts. And I think that I hope I have an open mind, that I want a new GSR to be aware how things operate today. However, I don't want me or somebody else giving an interpretation of what Bill W. said originally. A new GSR or a current delegate or anyone else should be able to access Bill W.'s original writings so that at least they know what the original intent was and the thought behind it. I don't live in fear, but I think it's okay to have healthy fears. And my healthy fear around changes to the service manual and the concepts is that if they're not readily available to other people, instead of people basing decisions on what Bill W. originally wrote, they would be basing decisions on the interpretation of someone like me of what Bill W. originally wrote. And I have way too much respect for all trusted servants, regardless how long they've served, that they should be able to evaluate and decide themselves what Bill W. was saying. So D already read the concept. It's divided into A and B. There are obviously not two other concepts that I zero laser in on more than concept 6 and concept 8. Because I think this is where all the problems occur. I'll just quickly repeat again. You all know, most of you, I consider traditions 1 to 5 the Bill of Rights of the AA groups. The groups are in charge per concept 1. They carry out that ultimate authority through electing delegates to the General Service Conference. Leaders need the right of decision in concept 3. Concept 4 describes participation. And concept 5, our right of petition and appeal and minority opinion. The second group of concepts is 6 to 8. They explain the complicated relationship between the conference and the board of trustees. 9, 10, and 11 explain a lot about how the trustees carry out that work. And 12 is the general warranties, the 6 warranties, Article 12 of the conference charter. So in concept 8, in that first section A, it says, with respect to the larger matters of overall policy and finance, they, meaning the trustees, are the principal planners and administrators. They and their primary committees directly manage these affairs. So a lot of times when you're trying to, when you're trying to interpret, or some people like to analyze the tradition, the concepts, it's sometimes important to realize what it doesn't say. What it doesn't say is, with respect to large matters of overall policy and finance, the trustees make the final decision. That's what it says in concept 6 about the General Service Conference. So if you're underlining words, and I think I said this when I talked about concept 6, in concept 8, underline planners, underline administrators, and underline manage. Because that is what the trustees do. They plan, administer, and manage. Sometimes we look at, and this is another kind of pet peeve that I have, but everybody's entitled to their own interpretation. But some people describe the conference process as a year-long process, which I believe. But I don't believe that the conference is the end of that process. I believe the conference is the start of that process. Because when the conference votes on advisory actions, those are binding on the trustees. And the trustees then have a year to carry out those instructions of what the fellowship has asked them to do. And then that is the start of the new conference year, leading up to the very next conference, where we start another conference year. There's a lot of things, obviously, that the conference should not be involved in. The language in concept 6 kind of helps us with that. It says, but the conference also recognizes that the chief initiative and active responsibility in most of these matters should be exercised primarily by the trustee members of the conference when they act amongst themselves as a General Service Board of Alcoholics Anonymous. In other words, again, I repeat myself over and over. There's only 2 things that make you an alcoholic: an allergy to alcohol and the mental obsession. But there's a lot of other character traits that we all have in common, it seems, a lot of us. Being controlling, sometimes there's a lot of alcoholics who are controlling. Liking to micromanage what other people do, it seems that that's a very common characteristic of alcoholics. Concept 6 is warning us, don't micromanage the trustees. But there's a bigger warning in concept 8. Concept 8 is warning the trustees, don't start making final decisions on large matters of AA policy and finance. That belongs to the conference. Right now, the way it is laid out, well, let me read the next section B, but with respect to our separately incorporated and constantly active services, the relation of the trustees is mainly that of a full stock ownership and of custodial oversight, which they exercise through their ability to elect all directors of these entities. There is a footnote in the current service manual. I'll read it. It's on page 33. Both AA World Services, Inc. and AA Grapevine, Inc. are now membership corporations. Their members are the trustees. AA World Services was incorporated as a nonprofit corporation in 1962. AA Grapevine was incorporated as a nonprofit in 1971. So there is no full stock ownership anymore. When the concept was written, there was the General Service Board, just call that the parent company, actually owned AAWS and the AA Grapevine. Today, it is a spiritual parent company, not a legal parent company. The 21 individual trustees are the 21 owners of each of those corporations, legally. And so their custodial oversight is by electing the directors for AA World Services and AA Grapevine. And we don't have one executive who runs the whole enterprise. AA Grapevine has their own executive, the publisher and editor. AAWS has their own executive. That's the general manager of the General Service Office. Those two people report to the AAWS board and the AA Grapevine board, each one individually. But we don't have an executive who's in charge of all of it. Now, there's a lot of talk about new styles of management. Bill writes carefully, he doesn't think the Grapevine should be a subsidiary of AA World Services. Honestly, I don't think that either. But that doesn't mean that I'm opposed to structural change. I like the way it is now because the power is divided. I would hate to see one powerful board or one powerful service corporation. Maybe there's a way to redivide the service corporations. I don't know. But what I do know is this, and this is based on, I have a pretty good handle on everything that's happened in General Service that was a controversy going back to the mid-90s. Direct experience. Prior to that, I have had direct experience talking to people who were experienced in those controversies. They all have one thing in common. When the trustees decide to make final decision on a large matter of policy and finance, whenever that happens, it blows up in our face. And we wind up going into a conference or two or three conferences where there's one major schism in AA, where there's one major issue that is getting all the attention. And a lot of times what they have in common is that the trustees took action on a large matter of policy or finance. And maybe they should have went to the conference first. You know, the concepts talk about consulting widely. That's always best for AA. And when we don't consult widely, people feel left out. And the pendulum swings hard in one direction or another. So that's it. Glad to be here. Look forward to the questions.
Thank you so much again, Billy. You guys have a way with words, the two of you, bringing this traditions and concepts for people like me to get it. So thank you so much. Questions, you guys can submit them in the chat. I haven't seen any come in yet. So now would be the time, unless you've sent them directly to Billy or Carrie. Billy, Carrie, do you have any questions yet? No? Okay. So I'll give it a few minutes. We'll take a look here, see if anything comes in. Any questions on tradition 8 or concept 8 or any of the traditions or concepts leading up to tonight that they've already covered? If you have anything that comes to you that you'd like to ask them. Okay. Billy, you've got something?
Let's see. I'll open up my chat again. I have no questions yet.
Okay.
I have one question. You have your own copy of the AA group pamphlet. I do. I do have my own copy of the AA group pamphlet.
That's true. Are you traveling with it, Billy?
I'm traveling with my service manual. But I have it on my phone.
Cute. All right. And we won't ask Carrie. We know the answer to that one. All right. Carrie, no questions have come in yet for you, my dear. I think I've got one that's come in. All right. Let me check. If you sponsor an individual and they want to give you gifts or one of their family members would like to, how should that be handled? Oof.
In prayerful consideration. Thoughtful contemplation. I have, for myself, my experience has been, like anything else, when I first, when these traditions first went from the head to the heart, my reaction was an extreme one. Of course, the first time it happened, it was a pretty extreme gift. This woman I was sponsoring, she had... They had a lot of money, and that's kind of her love language. And, and I don't fault her for it today. This was years ago, but, I took her over to, I was dropping her off at treatment and we were 2 hours early. And so we went window shopping, and I made the mistake of oogling over this fur coat. For fun. I didn't know, that was going to be my Christmas present that year. And I had not a great reaction. I've learned from that. Now I have a conversation. The last time it happened is actually with a woman that I'm just sponsoring, in California since the pandemic. And at least this time I didn't make her cry, which is good. And I don't mean to, but I did after she recovered, and she's never had that experience before in all of her years in AA. She had, she couldn't really get any time, whatnot. She's very grateful. I understand it's gratitude, but I get this box in the mail, and this was just, a few months back, and I get this box in the mail. And it's from her, and I open it up, and there's not just one gift, many gifts. And so I knew that she was coming to visit, the previous week. So I didn't do anything. No, and I thought it was going to be a face-to-face conversation, and it was, and I didn't do it in front of her husband, and I didn't embarrass her, and I didn't do it in front of my husband. And, and I just said, oh my gosh, I love you so much. And I'm so grateful that I was able to, affect your life in this way and help you to find God. But when you give me payment for that, even in a form of a gift, it takes away some of the spiritual aspect for me. And what I want from you, if you are so grateful for what I've given you, is to take everything I've given you and give it to someone else. Turn around and do the exact same thing for someone else. And that's kind of the conversation I have when it happens today.
Beautiful. I've sent a couple of questions to both of you. I believe to Billy, you have a couple that came over.
Yes, I have a couple of questions. First is, what is the breakdown of the concepts slowly, please? Okay. Concepts 1 to 5 are like the Bill of Rights of the AA groups. Concept 1 says they're in charge. Concepts 2 tells them how they carry out that ultimate authority. 3 is the right of decision for our leaders and trusted servants. 4 is the right of participation. And finally, 5, the right of petition and appeal and minority opinion. Concepts 6 through 8 explain the relationship between the conference and the trustees. Concepts 9, 10, and 11, those narratives talk a lot about how the trustees carry out their responsibilities. How do they do their jobs? How do they pick their successors? How do the committees work? What are the characteristics of a good AA leader? And concept 12 is just Article 12 of the conference charter, the warranties. There's a question here. Recently, there was a service piece released by the General Service Office titled Safety in AA, Our Common Welfare. Is this a larger matter of overall policy? Why did GSO release this piece, or perhaps am I missing something? Well, first of all, it's a service piece. That original service piece was approved by the office, by the AAWS board. It did not require conference approval, so I want to make that clear. The second is, but when you talk about, just because something doesn't need to be approved by the conference, doesn't mean it doesn't has to be. The preamble, a perfect example. The AA Grapevine Board could have changed the preamble, but they decided, because it was such a big part of AA, they should get feedback from the conference. If you've read this new service piece and you love it, or if you've read it and you can't stand it, you should talk to your delegate and your district chair and maybe bring it up in your group meeting. Could Billy give another example or two of trustees making decisions on larger matter of policy and finance and the results? Well, I think what I would say about this is sometimes it's not even about them making the decision. Sometimes it's about how they made the decision. And more often than not, I want to just go to the end of concept 3. It's about how quickly they reported the decision. I'll go to the last page 13 of concept 3. The right of decision should never be made an excuse for failure to render proper reports of all significant actions taken. It ought never be used as a reason for constantly exceeding a clearly defined authority, nor an excuse for persistently failing to consult those who are to be consulted before an important decision takes place. And rendering proper reports means timely. It does not mean waiting 4 months and then telling the fellowship that they took a significant action. And there's lots of things, if we go back, there's the San Diego money, there's the Germany litigation, there's over literature, there's the Mexico litigation over literature. There is, some felt the trustees weren't timely enough with the litigation around the murder of a woman in California and how that was reported out to the fellowship. When AA was sued, some felt the manuscript litigation, another item where people felt that the manuscript litigation started 2 weeks after the General Service Conference. you just spent $600,000 to fly and house every delegate in the United States and Canada together, and you don't tell them that maybe in 2 or 3 weeks you have planned to start this very large lawsuit. So what I want to stress is not about whether you are on one side or the other. I want to stress about communication and transparent communication and timely communication. I'll give you another example. The first time I really remember about this in my AA experience was on an area level. I was at an assembly at the last, and I am not going to say which assembly. So if you don't even send in that question, I'm just telling you, I'm not going to answer the question. But I was at an assembly, and at the prior two assemblies, the treasurer had noted that they were having difficulty getting, and this is before email. I know I'm dating myself, but before email. The treasurer noted that she was having a hard time getting the bank statement sent to her house. And so that was in the minutes. And at this following assembly, the treasurer reported that she had in fact found a large discrepancy in the financial records. And what she had discovered is that the prior treasurer had redirected the bank statements somewhere else so that she didn't see them. And when she finally did see the bank statements, the old treasurer had a family member with a medical problem. I'm not justifying, I'm just restating the facts. And the treasurer had lent himself a lot of money. And then over time was paying the area back. Except never asked the area to borrow the money to begin with. And never told the area that it was paying back. The thing that the assembly got so upset over was that she also reported that about 5 months before that, at a meeting of the area officers at a Chinese restaurant, the area officers had decided not to tell the groups. And what I saw happen at that assembly, and I was very new to service, was people were very unhappy with the past treasurer, and he was a current officer, by the way. But they were more unhappy with the area officers. Some even thinking that they should resign. I've heard this in another concept study, and I could not disagree with it more. That recently, in the last couple of years, there was an issue at an area, financial. And a past delegate suggesting that the groups didn't need to know. And I would argue very strongly against that. That is not how I view the upside down triangle. It is not how I read concept 3. And sometimes I think, and I'm pleading guilty to this, and I want to watch myself and I want to be careful and be better today or tomorrow than I was the day before. But there is a spiritual arrogance that sometimes seeps into the minds of AA leaders. And as they go down the triangle, they think that the reason they're in that position is because they know better than the groups. Or they say things like, the groups can't handle the truth. Well, I would just point out to any AA leader or future leader, it's not about whether they can handle it. And that's not your decision to make. Your only responsibility is accurate, transparent, timely communication to the people that you report to above yourself, on the upside down triangle. And sometimes I think that gets lost, that we forget that anybody below the you in the triangle, they report to you. You don't report to them. GSRs do not get told what to do by delegates. A delegate may share experience that could help them with their job or their group problem, but it's actually the GSRs and DCMs that tell somebody what to do. I mean, just think about it yourself. Imagine somebody stole money from you as an individual and somebody else knew about it, but they decided you couldn't handle the truth. That's not a question for them to decide. That was your property, and same thing with the money. Legally, the money might be the area officer's money, depending upon the kind of corporate makeup that area has. But spiritually, the groups are in charge. Thanks.
Thank you. Carrie, you've got a couple?
Yeah, I also had time to look up Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. The page is 127 through 128, where Dr. Bob, it's just amazing. Like, this writing is beautiful, where Dr. Bob also declined even, you know, doing this stuff for money. So one of the questions I have is, I've recently had a fellow who often spoke at AA meetings. He since sent me a WhatsApp saying he rebranded himself and sent me a recovery coach website. He's looking for referrals as he's a recovery coach. I was disappointed and I've not been replying. I know the guy only through AA. Although he's not actually using the AA platform to promote, I still feel disappointed. Is this a violation of the tradition? For me, it would be. I would feel like I was definitely violating the tradition. Everyone gets to decide for themselves. I've had that experience. I've had, you know, women from the women's meeting that I used to attend try to hit me up for Girl Scouts cookies, you know, when their daughters sell Girl Scouts cookies. I've had that happen at the meetings. They would bring their girls to the meetings with them. You know, that's uncomfortable. It's more uncomfortable for me when I see a newcomer seeing it happen than it is for me to just say, no, but I'll buy them when you tell me where you're outside of what grocery store and I'll come and buy them there. This happens on a grand scale. There's one woman who she owns a sober living house, or maybe probably more than that at this point. And I get tons of, the only way I know her is through AA. And I get tons of promotions sent to my email. I get added to Facebook groups by her for her sober living houses. And it's pretty constant. It's definitely, I think, a tradition 8 and 6 question that if I sponsored you, I would be having you look at some questions for yourself. So, but I don't sponsor this person. So that's, and then do you ever, here's the other question. Do you ever gift your sponsees anything? This is not, I'm not coming from any sort of literature here. I don't like answering questions like this, because if you gift your sponsees something, that's wonderful for you. If you don't, that's wonderful for you. And there is no right or wrong here. My experience is when I first started sponsoring, you know, all my sponsees got the exact same fancy coin and whatnot, you know, and then I started getting into service and I don't put as much stock into the coins as I do some of our literature anymore. And so, you know, when you turn 2, when you get 2 year anniversary, you know, you might get an AA comes of age instead of a fancy coin. It's just kind of what I do. But I do gift my sponsees things. And I know Debbie D out of California, she talks about how she doesn't gift one sponsee something different from the next. And I get that. I do. And I can see where that would be good. And I don't know how I got on her list, but she also gives me the same thing every year for my birthday as she gives her sponsees. So I'm a bonus, I guess, because she's not my sponsor, but I get it in the mail. And so that's awesome that it can be all the way across the board, even and equal. And I respect her for that wholeheartedly. However, I am not that way with my sponsees. Every one of my relationships with my sponsees are very, very different. They look different. If I see a sponsee of mine who, quite frankly, isn't doing the work, isn't using me, and is on her way out, she's probably not going to get a whole lot from me, other than a, hey, if you're still sober, happy birthday. But if I have a sponsee who's doing the work and a lot of good for AA, she's probably going to get something super meaningful whether that's right or wrong or indifferent, that's what I do. And I think it's got to be personal to you. Thanks.
Thanks, Carrie. You got anything else, Billy? And Carrie, double check, make sure you don't have any more.
No more questions.
Okay. I don't see any for myself either. You either, Carrie? Okay. Well, that's it, folks. And I want to thank you so much. And thank you all of us for being together this evening. Another wonderful, beautiful evening. Next week, we'll be on Tradition 9 and Concept 9. So bring those questions with you guys. And I want to say thank you again to both of you for giving up your time, and especially while you're traveling, Billy. Thank you. All right, we'll close with the responsibility statement. I am responsible when anyone, anywhere reaches out for help. I want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I am responsible. Thank you, both of you, very much.